From the Jackalope Studios, high above the city in the beautiful Berry View Castle, welcome to the Harmony Health Hour, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright. You're not the only one I've ever had, and if I say I want to set you free,
Friday, it's the Harmony Health Hour. This is Dr. Drumright on Jackalope Radio. Glad to see to talk to you all out there. I guess I don't get to see you. It's radio.
That's, yeah.
We got an exciting show tonight. We have a special guest that I've been very much excited to look forward to having a conversation with. Her name is Ariel Ford, and she'll be with us in a few minutes. But like always, we want to start off the night with a little philosophy, and we're going to get into the Tao Te Ching tonight. Verses number 38 and 39. Verse number 38 is distinguishing the highest from the lowest morality. We're going to talk about morals here. You can readily recognize the highest virtuousness because it never places itself on display. You can readily recognize the lowest virtuousness because it's always announcing itself. The highest virtue quietly serves universal needs. The lowest virtue actively strives for personal success. The highest morality serves common needs. The lowest morality is self-serving. True benevolence acts without intention, but when rituals go unheeded, they are enforced with rolled-up sleeves. Failing the great integrity, we resort to virtuousness. Failing virtuousness, we resort to moralizing. Failing moralizing, we resort to dogma. The most superficial form of faith and loyalty, and the nourishment for confusion. Natural persons are attracted to substance rather than form, to nutritious fruit rather than the enticing flower, to that which dwells deeply within rather than to that which clings superficially to the surface. Dr. Dale's commentary. The focus of this verse is on distinguishing the highest forms from the lowest forms of morality. The highest forms of morality are directed to serving the needs of others and are carried out quietly, with humility, naturally, and without self-conscious intention. The lowest forms are precisely the opposite. They are motivated by ego satisfactions, fulfilling personal self-interests, and by announcing their own beneficence. Four specific levels of integrity are differentiated from the highest level, the great integrity, to the lowest level, the coercive enforcement of dogma and ritual. In between is virtuousness, moralizing, and moralizing that are middle grounds between the highest and lowest moralities. It is interesting to note that Lao Tzu has nothing but contempt for ritual, while for Confucius, his younger contemporary, ritual was the pinnacle of virtue. How ironic that according to legend, Confucius went to visit Lao Tzu to become enlightened on matters of ritual, since Lao Tzu held the position of an archivist for the state of Chu. Needless to say, Confucius stormed out of his audience with Lao Tzu, denouncing him as a dangerous dragon. Soon after this incident, it is said that Lao Tzu, only in midlife, retired from his official position and fled to the mountains to live the rest of his life in seclusion.
Man.
So even while he was active, Lao Tzu, what he was teaching was counter to a large government and large control and the dogma of ritualism. It was about individual moral expression to help others, applying yourself to help others, not applying yourself to help yourself. But as the great integrity continues on, when you apply yourself to help others, your personal growth is exponentially more valid and more abundant than it would be in the ego driving of doing everything to help yourself.
Right.
Verse 39, then and now. In ancient times, and I remember this was written in 400 BC, so ancient times to 400 BC was really ancient times, all entities had their own integrity and function. The sky was clear and endless. The earth was calm and firm. The gods were charged with spiritual powers. The wells were clean and full. The 10,000 creatures were healthy and festooned. Leaders were elected to plan the work and defense of the community. How wondrously concordant. If the sky were not endless, it could have fallen. If the earth were not firm, it could have burst. If the gods did not exercise their spiritual powers, they would have been abandoned. If the wells were not full, they could have dried up. If the 10,000 creatures were not productive, they could have become extinct. If the leaders did not plan the work and defense of the community, they would have been replaced. In this way, each entity had its own essentiality, each part complementing every other. Nowadays, when the privileged among us identify themselves with the orphan, the widower, and the hungry one, it may be an opportunistic appeal for the support of the lowly, or a realization that loudly trumpeting self-glory negates itself, or a premonition that shining like jade and resounding like stone chimes attracts the desperate adventurers among those deprived of hope, inviting disaster among those who create these deprivations. That's a little deep.
It's a lot deep.
Commentary. In ancient times, when all lived as part of the great integrity, each had its own function, performing it with integrity and with respect for all other entities. When one did not fulfill its function, it was replaced for the good of all, because poor functioning of one entity threatened all others. Nowadays, from even before the time of Lao Tzu, right through our own day, the privileged tend to care only for their own well-being, while the underprivileged are deprived of realizing their capabilities and of benefiting from the bountifulness of all the available resources. The former, having for the most part lost their moral integrity, tend to rationalize these inequities in the 10,000 opportunistic masquerades, some of which Lao Tzu lists in the final stanza. So what he's saying is to approach the great integrity is to remember to be humble. Remember the three treasures: humility, moderation, and love. Those are the things to keep in mind whenever you are successful or you're creating success and becoming abundant in your life. You always have to go back to the humility, moderation, and love to maintain that success. If you don't remember those three lessons, you will be toppled, you will fall over, you will not be happy. To maintain happiness and success together is to remember the three treasures. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to bring in our special guest tonight. Her name is Ariel Ford. She's a best-selling author of The Soulmate Secret. She's been known as America's number one book publicist, working with authors such as Deepak Chopra, Mark Victor Hansen, Wayne Dyer, Dean Ornish, many others of my favorite authors. This is exciting to get to talk to her. She's recently published a book called Wabi Sabi Love, and we're going to have her on the radio show here in just a few minutes to talk about that.
Sounds good.
All right, let's have a quick break, and we'll get back to talk to Ariel.
There she stood in the street, smiling from her head to her feet. I said, hey, what is this? Baby, maybe, maybe she's in need of a kiss. I said, hey, what's your name, baby? Maybe we can see things the same. Now don't you wait, oh, hesitate. Let's move before they raise the parking lot. Let me tell you now. I took her home to my place, watching every move on her face. She said, look, what's your game, baby? Are you trying to put me in shame? I said, slow, don't go so fast. Don't you think that love can last? She said, love, Lord above, now you're trying to trick me in love. All right now, baby, it's all.
You're listening to Dr. Daryl Drumright and the Harmony Health Hour on Jackalope Radio.
We're back. This is Dr. Drumright in the Harmony Health Hour. With me is my special guest, Ariel Ford. You can say hi, Ariel.
Hi. Hi, everybody. How are you today?
Oh, we're doing awesome out here. And I tell you what, Errol, you've written this book called Wabi Sabi Love, and I've read through this book, and it very much highlights and enhances a lot of things that I do. I understand that you've been married for 14 years now?
Uh-huh.
Well,
exactly.
We have our 16th anniversary coming up in June for me and my wife, and it's amazing what your book has highlighted for my relationship, because my wife and I are exact opposites in a lot of different things, but that's the secret of our success in our relationship, is that we play off each other, and we actually move forward in life by playing with each other's strengths. There are certain things she does really well and I don't do very well, and there's things that I do really well that she doesn't do very well. And at first it was a conflict, but as the years have rolled by, we've learned how to play tennis with this. You know, if this is something that I'm good at, she gives it to me. If it's something she's good at, I give it to her.
Oh, that sounds like a really workable plan.
So tell us what brought this up. I mean, this is a Japanese term, right? Wabi-sabi love?
Yeah, wabi-sabi is an ancient Japanese aesthetic that honors all things old, worn, weathered, imperfect, and impermanent. And it seeks to find beauty and perfection in imperfection. So, for example, if you had a big vase with a crooked crack down the middle of it, the Japanese would put it on a pedestal and shine a spotlight on the crack.
Mm-hmm.
So wabi-sabi love is about learning to find the beauty and perfection in your own cracks, and especially those of your partner.
So not trying to make them something they're not, but highlighting and finding an affection towards who they are.
Exactly, because we all want to be loved for who we are. We want to be accepted for who we are, you know, warts, quirks, and all.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with a lot of people in relationship is they're constantly trying to change the other person.
Mm-hmm.
They have this idea in the head that whatever their behavior is wrong, not so much because it's really wrong, because it's different than the way they think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been nagging at them maybe for months or even years, trying to get them to change some kind of behavior, even if it's something as simple as whether or not they squeeze the toothpaste from the bottom or from
mm-hmm,
the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the way they were raised. It's just some idea or belief they have that it needs to be some way different. And they've probably noticed by now that nagging doesn't work, that doesn't get them to change. And maybe what needs to change is you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could just learn to make up a new story about what it is that they're doing so you can let go of it. And I'll give you an example of this. I'm one of these people. I squeeze the toothpaste from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
My husband squeezes it from the middle.
Oh, how annoying.
So when we first got together, I was annoyed, right? It's
mm-hmm.
like, oh, why can't he squeeze it from the bottom? And there I am squeezing it from the bottom. And then I thought, you know, this is so stupid to create stress in my body over something so insignificant. So my new story became, thank God this guy brushes his teeth.
Yeah.
I see the toothpaste squeezed in the middle. I now have a positive reaction.
That he
Isn't
brushed his teeth.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is kind of a silly thing.
Yeah.
But the point is, you can do it with anything. When Brian and I first got together, he was always saying to me, can't you just take your coffee cup and move it from the sink to the dishwasher? How hard would that be? And you just made some toast. Couldn't you just clean up the crumbs around the toaster? How hard would that be? And a year later, he finally said to me, he said, I realize that no matter how many times I ask you to put your cup in the dishwasher or wipe up the crumbs around the toaster, it never happens. So I've decided that it's going to be better for both of us if I just clean up after you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? And here's what I'm going to do. I've noticed that every time I walk in the house, there's always at least two TVs on really loud.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I walked in the house last week, and there were four TVs on really loud, and you weren't even home.
Mm.
So I'm just going to walk around and turn the TVs off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, practicing wabi-sabi is about making your life easier, their life easier, and to stop complaining and confessing about all these things that don't really matter.
Right, the sweating the little stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, because what happens is we create stress in our bodies,
mm-hmm.
and it hurts us. It actually suppresses our immune system
mm-hmm.
to go into a stress response over something that isn't a big deal.
Absolutely. We do a lot of stress testing here in the clinic. Your stress hormones that come up from these kind of mild problems or anxieties that build up because the world's not exactly as you want it to be. And your book is a good explanation if you go into, well, maybe it's not supposed to be exactly as you want it to be, and maybe you're the one that's supposed to be looking at the world and embracing it for what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's lots of ways to have fun with it. Now, you can use it for more serious issues. The one disclaimer that I like to give out is that you can't wabi-sabi your way out of addiction or abuse or really bad behavior.
Right.
If you're with a partner who is exhibiting any of that, please get professional help. You don't want to try and find beauty and perfection in any form of abuse or addiction.
Right, that could lead into codependency and these kind of problem issues, huh?
Right. But, you know, it's like, oh, I was talking to somebody the other day who was, you know, complaining that her husband bites his fingernails, you know, and it just makes her crazy. It's like, you know what? That's how he deals with his stress. It's not driving him crazy. It's driving you crazy. Can't you just, you know, love him for this weird little quirk that he has? You know, because if he were to disappear tomorrow, you would be missing that.
Mm-hmm.
You would be saying, oh, God, what I wouldn't give to see him bite his nails one more time.
Right.
So you're the one who's really being hurt by making up a story that it's wrong.
Right. You're creating your own reality, and you're nagging at yourself. By nagging at them, you're literally nagging your own hormones and making yourself miserable.
Right, and then you get belly fat. All that cortisol creates belly fat.
Right, which creates cholesterol problems, you know, and then you got
it's
cascading down the wrong direction.
Effect.
Exactly. So give us some more examples of how this is applied across the relationship.
You know, one of my favorite stories in the book is about a couple named Jerry and Diane.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry is about 25 years older than his wife, and they've been together 30 years now. But Jerry does have an addiction. And his addiction is poppy seed bagels. Every single morning he gets up, he slices a poppy seed bagel, which sends little black poppy seeds scattering all over Diane's white tile floor. He toasts his bagel, he puts on his cream cheese, and then he walks around the kitchen eating his bagels, dropping more poppy seeds everywhere that he goes. And then every morning Diane gets up a little bit later, and she takes a wet paper towel, and she wipes up the black poppy seeds. And normally this isn't a problem for her, but one morning she'd just gotten off the phone with a difficult conversation, and she was a bit crabby and cranky. And while she was on her hands and knees wiping up the poppy seeds, she had this thought, I wonder what it would take to never have to do this again, which was followed by the thought, oh, that would mean Jerry's no longer with me.
Mm-hmm.
And she started to cry, and she ran into the other room to give him a hug. And from that day forward, every time she wiped up little black poppy seeds off the floor, she was filled with love because it meant to her that she had another day to spend with Jerry.
Right. Now, it kind of has to go both ways, though, doesn't it? I mean, I could see how it could kind of get abusive on one side versus the other. If one person is adapting and doing all this and the other person starts getting complacent with it, it's like, oh, well, she's just going to, like, mop up after me all the time. I'm just going to get more lazy and kind of reinforce those kind of behaviors.
You know, I haven't really found that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
What I found to be true is the opposite, is when one person is developing what I call a generous heart.
Right.
The other person in that energy field sort of automatically, maybe even unconsciously, starts to do it as well.
Right.
And that's
right.
Certainly what I've seen in you know, my relationship. You know, it's like, and I saw this other incident where when we first got together, Brian was always watching basketball on TV. And I didn't know anything about basketball on TV or basketball at all, but I had always said, oh, I'm never going to watch sports on TV. But I saw how passionate he was about it. And so I said to him one day, I said, well, if I were going to watch 15 minutes of any game with you, what 15 minutes should I watch? And he said, well, why don't you watch the last 15, because that's where all the action is.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I did it, I was bored to tears. The second time I did it, I noticed that there was this really short guy on the team who was making all the scores.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that from then on, any time I watched basketball, I was going to root for the shortest guys on the team. And suddenly I got interested in basketball, and I started watching it with him more often. Well, without even asking Brian to do something for me, like, well, I did this for you, what are you going to do for me? He on his own came to me and said, you know how I never really liked to watch those, you know, dumb, silly chick flicks with you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite movie is Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
He said, I so enjoy hearing you laugh that any time you want to go to a chick flick, you just ask me and I'll go with you.
Oh.
And it was just sort of a spontaneous thing.
Yeah.
So I really see that when you're practicing wabi-sabi, when you're allowing people to be who they are, when you're just internally finding the beauty and perfection in their imperfection,
right?
You know, like the law of karma, it does come back to you.
Sure, sure. I've got a kind of a personal story that we've developed from is my wife is the neat one, and I'm the kind of the one that kind of leaves stuff around. So we're kind of the opposite of you and Brian. And sometimes I'll go out of my way and actually clean up to try to get to impress her. And then if she's not careful, though, because she's such a detailed person, she'll come up with something else that I needed to do. And so my reward for going out of my way to try to respond to this was more of the, you know, well, you need to do this and this and this. And so when I pointed that out to her that I was getting negative feedback when I tried to step forward, she really caught on to that. It's like, you know what, you're absolutely right. You know, I got to be a little bit more careful about this, that when you do step forward and try to, you know, get into my world, that I've got to recognize that versus trying to push it even farther.
Yeah, so true.
Mm-hmm. We have to really be observant of each other, don't we?
Yeah, and, you know, so many people say, you ask them, what's the most important thing in your life? And the knee-jerk response is family.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sort of put a magnifying over them and look where they're spending their time, it's probably anything but family. You know, so if you're saying, you know, this is the most important person in my life, why wouldn't you want to give them your love and time and energy and attention?
Right.
You know, I mean, this is a person you really want to honor. And if that's what you're looking for, you know, I would say give what you most want to get.
Right, right. Treat the way you want to be treated.
Exactly.
Very, very good. So this is called Wabi-Sabi Love. It was put out in January of this year.
Mm-hmm. And it came out on January 3rd. And I've got a website. It's thewabisabibook.com. And if you buy the book from that site, you get tons and tons of free goodies. There's a one-hour interview with Harville Hendricks and John Gray and Alison Armstrong, and there's guided visualizations on how to get unstuck when you don't really feel like you can get to a wabi-sabi solution.
Nice.
So there's all kinds of cool stuff there. It's thewabisabibook.com.
The Wabi Sabi Book, that's WABISABIBOOK.com.
Yeah, thewabisabibook.com.
Excellent, excellent. That I want to go back into kind of one of your other career that you've had before I let you go here. And you're also a book publicist, and one of my most well-read authors is Deepak Chopra, and you've spent time, you helped him publish some of his books, Body Electric and these kind of things, Mark Victor Hansen, Wayne Dyer, another one of my, these are some of my favorite authors, and you've spent time with these people and helped them put these books out. That is some pretty sort of pretty impressive, amazing stuff. I mean, what is Deepak like in person? Is he,
well, I'm actually going to his house for dinner in about 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
He's a lot of fun. He's exactly like you would expect him to be. He walks his talk completely. He lives and breathes this stuff. He loves to teach it. He's really easygoing. So, yeah, he's terrific.
I spent
many, many years as a book publicist for a lot of the leaders in the self-help, spirituality sector, and got to know them well, and it was great. Lots and lots of fun, my favorite books to read. And the thing that they all have in common is that they're on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
They really feel like they have destiny to share this information. And even though a lot of them have gotten very wealthy and famous doing it, that's not why they do it.
Right.
They just feel driven to share their special gifts with the world. And I think that's why they're so popular, because they are coming from this very pure place of service.
Right, right. Very much. That's kind of the way I push my life forward. I follow the Tao, and actually, I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show, I always start these shows off with passages from the Tao Te Ching, you know, and ways of getting back to the great integrity and following the path towards a calm enlightenment. You have a website to help people write books, too. Let's put that out there for people.
Yeah, it's everythingyoushouldknow.com, everythingyoushouldknow.com. And it's a home study course that I put together to teach people what you need to know about the publishing industry, how to find an agent, how to get published so you don't make all the mistakes I made 20 years ago when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very complete program, and I've had thousands of people go through it and become authors. Because there was a study done a few years ago that found that 82% of Americans plan to write a book someday.
Mm-hmm.
But before you start writing the book, and for sure, don't quit your day job, there's so much you need to understand about what goes into becoming a successful author.
Mm-hmm.
So I really recommend that you know what you're doing before you waste a lot of time and energy, because most people think step number one is to write the book, and that's so not the truth. That is more like step number 10.
Right.
There's so many other things you need to do before you actually write the book. So that's what we go through on the everythingyoushouldknow.com site.
Well, that's awesome. I've been teaching acupuncture for 20 years now. I've been traveling the country teaching doctors the advanced acupuncture and Qigong methods. I studied in the Shaolin temples in China and bring this stuff back. So as far as personally, my book pretty much would write itself. All I've got to do is get it out there. But I like what you said in there, and I want to bring this up on this thing that writing the book isn't the first thing, and you said something on the website. It's about a format, or what did you call it? The thing that you want to put out first.
Oh, platform.
Platform.
You need
yeah.
to create a platform. Yes, because publishers, yes, they do acquire books, but these days, more important than the book is your platform, and your platform is the collection of, you know, your speaking engagements, your media appearances, your email list, your blogs, your social media following,
mm-hmm.
your newsletters. They want to know that you already have fans
right.
that are primed to buy your book the minute it's ready. And if you don't have a platform, if you're brand new, I don't care how good the book is, and I just want to specify, we're only talking about nonfiction here.
Right.
We're not talking about fiction, just nonfiction. If you do not have a platform, you will not get a book deal in this day and age.
Well, that's excellent, because I've already got over 5,000 followers on Facebook. I've got
the show.
Yeah, I've got a radio show. And this
people
is
love the show.
Yeah.
Right. So you're well positioned to now write a book proposal. You don't need to write the whole book. You need to write the book proposal. So there's lots to know. It's just like, you know, you wouldn't expect to, you know, figure out how to be a brain surgeon without
right.
education.
Right.
Don't try to figure out how to be an author without educating yourself first. And if, you know, one place you can start to get lots of information for free, two things. Go to everythingyoushouldknow.com and sign up for my free newsletter, because
okay.
once a month I do a free teleseminar. And then look me up at HuffingtonPost.com
uh-huh.
because I have dozens and dozens of how to get published blogs that are there for free. It's HuffingtonPost.com/Ariel-Ford, or just search me on Huffington Post, and there's lots of good information there as well.
That's fantastic, Ariel. Thank you very much for for coming on the show and you know, doing everything that you're doing. I mean, you seem to really come from the heart and out there to help people and enjoy your life as well. 15 years now, huh? When's your anniversary?
June 22nd.
That's my anniversary.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, we'll be 16 years this year.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations. Well,
congratulations to you guys. Do you have children?
No, we have cats.
Cats, awesome. The second best thing. They're just as ornery.
That's for sure.
Yeah, we have three. They're 12, 10, and 8 now, so life is very exciting.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Well, Ariel, I appreciate your time and you coming on to the show tonight. I really, it's been an exciting talking to you. If there's anything else I can do for you in the future, just get a hold of us through Jackalope, and my website's harmonyhealth.com. So I'm out there trying to help people. I'm putting together classes on acupressure points to just teach the lay people where the hot points are on the body to help home health and get the information into their hands, so we can cut the cost of health care by teaching people how to take care of themselves.
Oh, that sounds like a great cause.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right. Well, it was great to talk to you.
Have a great day, Ariel.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
That was awesome, Todd.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Very
nice. All
right,
let's take another break, and then we'll get back for the final segment.
You got it. Let me get you queued up here.
All right. Harmony Health Hour, Friday night.
Heck yeah. We're going to rock it.
You're listening to Dr. Daryl Drumright and the Harmony Health Hour on Jackalope Radio.
All right, this is Dr. Drumright, and we're back with another special guest for tonight, and this is a surprise special guest. I would like you to introduce everybody to my daughter, Macy Drumright. Say hi, Macy.
Hi.
Macy is 12 years old. How old, and when's your birthday?
March 27th.
March 27th, so she's almost 13. I almost have a teenager in the house, Todd.
Man.
Oh, my God, my first teenager.
I'm getting close, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Your and they happen to be friends, which
yeah,
is...
That's yeah, that's right. Your daughter's right there with her, isn't
I
she?
I know, yeah.
And she's been on your show before.
Yep, yep. She made a quick appearance.
All right. So, Macy, we're going to spend a little time. I want you to kind of tell the world out there what a chiropractor's daughter, all the life aspects of living with a chiropractor. Let me start with one thing. Have you ever been had a needle stuck in your body?
Yep. Well, what type of needle like are you talking like, about?
Like a vaccination needle, like a doctor's needle.
No.
No. Never been vaccinated. You don't even know what that feels like, do you?
No, nor do I want to.
Don't worry. As long as you live under my house, you'll never have that experience. Has that conversation ever come up with your friends at school?
Yeah, many times.
You know what? Tell me about it. Tell me what do they talk about?
Well, like they say, like I'm not allowed. I shouldn't be in school if I'm not vaccinated and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then one of my friends will say, like, but her parents don't believe in it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And.
So does that ever bother you that you're different than the rest of them?
No.
So Macy being different is not a bad thing, huh?
No, different is awesome. Normal is boring.
That's exactly right. Normal is boring. So what are you into, Macy?
Anime, Naruto, Bleach.
Yeah. Is that what a lot of 12-year-olds are into these days?
Well, it's popular, just you wouldn't see a whole bunch of people walking around talking about it, I guess, because I know a couple kids in school and stuff that do know about it and like it and stuff, but you wouldn't see like cosplayers and all that just walking across. Well, you would actually, but
cosplayers, what is that?
Short for costume play, where people dress up as their favorite anime character.
Todd, you kind of know about that kind of stuff.
I do know about that kind of stuff, yeah.
You got some costumes over there.
I do. It's a little different. It's not manga-based, but mine's there for help kids, you know, to do the Batman thing, to do appearances for charity or whatever.
I see a Spider-Man
costume.
Yeah,
I've got a Spider-Man, too,
there.
And a Thor.
Yep.
Got a few.
Got to stay in shape to wear those things, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's a pain.
You get that beer belly. Just
yeah,
doesn't
too much Minsky's, it ain't going to work. Yeah.
Oh, my. All right, Macy, so what did we have for breakfast this morning?
Eggs.
Why did we have eggs?
Because testing.
It's testing time, isn't it?
Yes.
And you're taking the high school graduation test, and you're 12 years old?
Well, I did take that. That was the ACT, but now we're taking the ITBS.
And ITBS, what is that for?
I don't know.
You just take the test and get on with it, huh?
Yeah.
Awesome. And those don't make you nervous or nothing about that at all, huh?
No.
I'm really proud of you, Macy. You just got such a self-confidence to you, you know. You just step right up. I mean, we shoved her in front of the microphone not 30 seconds before we went back on air, and you got all there is to get about Macy. She's right there with us every step of the way. So have you ever been in this room before, Macy?
No.
This is the first time you've been back here in the radio show?
Yeah.
So what do you think of this place?
Well, the... Pinhead dude scared me when I first came in, because I thought you were talking about to him when you came in, because you're like, here's Macy, and I stared at him. I jumped back because I thought you were talking to him.
I was introducing you to Pinhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a life-size Pinhead right behind me here. So that's our acupuncture dummy, Macy. That's how we tell where the acupuncture points. You see all the pins sticking out of his face.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So do we drink soda pop in our house at all?
No, unless it's a birthday party.
Mm-hmm. And even then...
not much.
Yeah, not much at all. And why don't we drink soda pop?
Because it's terrible.
Mm-hmm. And it's terrible because it's got the corn syrup in it.
Yeah.
You know, high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, all the colors and stuff like that. Doesn't go in there. Have you ever had a Twinkie?
You're asking me that because at Boy Scouts, they had a giant box full of them. So, yes, I've had a Twinkie.
Oh, you've had how many times in your life have you eaten a Twinkie, Macy?
Well, I ate five in one day. So.
There you go. made up for it all at once.
That's right. She gets access to a Twinkie. You know, that's what happens, you know. They're going to rebel. I feel kind of like the preacher, you know. The preacher's daughter's going to be, like, totally rebelling.
She's going to be rocking and rolling.
Wait, isn't that from, like, I don't remember the name of the movie, but we saw it in a music class.
It's like Footloose.
Yeah, that movie.
Yeah, Footloose.
We saw part of it.
Well, I'm not a preacher on those kind of moral things. I do preach. I'm a ninja on healthy food, though, and exercise. So what are the three aspects that I've made important in your life?
Health.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Trying to cure over there. Music.
Yeah, and music and education. Exercise.
Yep, that's right. So what do you do for music right now?
Flute.
And what kind of flute?
Native American flute.
Native American. Todd, she got a Native American flute for Christmas, and she picked it right up and just went right to singing, to doing her Naruto Japanese anime stuff.
It's Naruto.
Naruto. Not, what is it?
I say the same thing, Naruto.
Naruto. It looks like Naruto. But she takes this Native American flute, authentic Native American flute, and plays Japanese traditional music on an American flute and does an outstanding job. The key isn't exactly the same as what she's listening to. She's playing it by ear, but she makes it sound extraordinary. You going to do that in a talent show this year?
Hopefully.
Yeah, you got to practice for that, though, huh? Make it
yeah.
right. Mm-hmm. And what are you doing for exercise these days?
Karate.
Karate, yeah. We just started karate a couple months ago, huh?
And soccer.
So very soon you're going to be doing both.
Yeah.
Same time.
Like one after another.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be painful.
Oh, yeah. You're up to it. Yeah, I'm real proud of you.
I'm
really
still sore from Tuesday.
On the karate?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get your orange belt soon? Or?
Yeah, because we need to be testing soon.
Mm-hmm. So you like karate?
Yeah.
Yeah, you look like you do out there. You're doing very well. Once again, I'm proud of you for everything that you're doing. Anything else?
Well, I would like to know, in school, does a lot of the things that they kind of teach you kind of rub against what you've learned from being raised by Dr. D? Because Dr. D has a lot of different, not only spiritual, but physical ideas about medicine and about everything, really. What is that like for you being his child and going to a public school?
Well, she doesn't go to a public school.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, she goes to a Catholic school.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. But regular school, I should say.
Right.
Well, there's nothing that really goes against it because they don't talk that much about the stuff, besides maybe some things in social studies.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then I just kind of listen to it and keep my ideas to myself because of reasons, because most of the time I'm drawing.
She zones out on when they're teaching it. That comes to like my Ron Paul teaching and my libertarian mindset. You know, when they get in there, they've got a lot of and the history, especially like Civil War. Remember the Civil War history class?
Yeah.
About the slaves. What did you ask the teacher?
I asked. What was it? It was like, didn't the North try to buy the slaves to
right,
free them?
Right. Yeah, if the war was really about slavery, why didn't they just buy the slaves and set them free instead of raising up an army and invading the South? You know, these kind of topics that I challenge the history lessons, and when she has an interest enough, she'll bring it up. But otherwise, they've learned how to cope just by, you know, be comfortable with who you are and what you know, but you don't have to force it down anybody else's throat. You know, the other ones are going to get indoctrinated through this. There's, you know, you really can't stop that, and you're going to create trouble on your own by bringing it up at certain times. There'll be a time later on in her life, in the boy's life, where, you know, it'll be a time to step up and say, you know what, that there's something really wrong with that. But right now, you know, they're kids. You know, it's time to just focus on the playtime, focus on the fun time, get your grades done, and, you know, just kind of get on with it.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. And it works really good, doesn't it?
Yep.
So we have two little brothers that you help out with it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you love your little brothers?
Yes. Enough that I got myself soaked trying to protect one from the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you step in the way for them?
Yeah, but he got soaked anyways.
Didn't work, huh?
No. Because he just went down again.
All right. Well, Macy, thank you very much for coming in tonight. You're welcome to come back and talk about any kind of, if you have any particular topic you want to put out to the people. These are recorded on MP3 files, so you can get it on your iPad afterwards. You can get all this stuff at jackaloperadio.com.
Yep.
You can get a hold of me at harmonyhealth.com. I wanted to, before we leave tonight, I want to send some special prayers and thoughts out to the people living in Kentucky, Indiana, and across the...
even here in Missouri.
Southern Missouri. I mean, we've had an amazingly calm winter, and we've all been very grateful for no snow and how warm and nice it's been. But it appears like we're going to get paid back in spades with a very violent spring as it's coming through. I understood 47 tornadoes struck today. We haven't seen all the damage as it's still striking across Georgia and moving up through there right now.
It's really interesting, too, because, and again, this goes kind of toward the Night Watch crowd, but a lot of these storms, they're not able to track them like normal. Mm-hmm. A normal storm, as you know, will come from the west,
right,
will travel from the southwest to the northeast,
right,
along the jet stream, sometimes a little different, but it's normally along, when it hits our area, it's from there.
Right.
It's kind of weird when storms are just popping up and appearing from the northeast and coming against the jet stream.
Right.
A lot of people are saying that this is because of HAARP, mm-hmm. H-A-A-R-P. Mm-hmm. And if any of your listeners would like to listen to that, they can look it up on Google and find all kinds of things about HAARP and learn about it and listen to stories about it. It is a real thing because the government itself owns the website for HAARP. It's a .gov website.
Sure, it's stationed up in Alaska, but there's actually more than one of them.
Right, there's a few of them, yeah.
Russia has one, and there's one stationed down in the Philippines now.
I think there's four now in the United States, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are related to, if you want to study in the HAARP, related to the chemtrails.
The microwaves too, because they're bending the ionosphere with microwaves, and anytime you bend like a balloon,
right,
or a bubble, and you bend one section, something else is going to give.
Right.
And so it's kind of weird. A lot of people are thinking that might be behind these storms that pop up, like the last spring when
the
hurricanes went through. Mm. And they hit Florida and then backtracked and went against the jet stream and hit Florida again.
Right.
Same hurricane hit Florida four times, going back and forth.
Boom, 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 boom.
It was weird.
And there was one in Mexico that did that too. It just bounced up and down off the coast for like days.
Yeah, people couldn't figure it out. It was making no sense.
You know, I got something on the news front on that. Did you see the volcanic plumes being recorded coming out of Arkansas in the last few days?
I did not.
Yeah, you're going to have to look that up. There's a time-lapse photography that they're looking from satellite images, and there's a number of places along the New Madrid Fault down there where there's ancient volcanic activity, you know, from a million years or so, that seems to be showing up with these periodic volcanic plumes coming out of the middle of Arkansas. Now, that's not good.
No.
We don't need volcanoes in Arkansas.
There's something a little bizarre going on there.
Well, I don't know if bizarre on a grand scheme of things, but something as far as humanity's a time frame, this is it could be quite a problem if Arkansas turns into a volcanic field again. But that's where it was built from. I mean, the crystal mines and the caves throughout Arkansas are all historical volcanic territory down there. But that was an interesting thing that came up this week. You know, we're kind of filling in space here. Todd, what else is showing? What the rest of your night look like?
Well, as always, we have Dean Haglin with the Chilpack Hollywood Hour. We have the Wild Wild Westmar action with the Brad Westmar Show. And then we're going to have Mike from the Night, doing the Night Breed Show, Mike the Ghost Getter.
Excellent. Well, Todd, let's do this. I want to just finish out with some good music, you know, kind of finish off the show here, let it blend out into the rest of the night. I'm going to go hang out. My kids are here with me. I'm going to go chill out and eat dinner with the kids. And
I have just the thing.
All right. We're going to call it quits for the night. This is Dr. Drumright, the Harmony Health Hour. We'll catch you next week. If you want to get a hold of Ariel Ford, if you've written a book or you're having problems in your love life, Wabi Sabi Love. And she also, look her up on Huffington Post. And I think you'll find a lot of cool information from this lady. I'll catch you all next week. This is Dr. Drumright. Over and out.
Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world. Unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible, and this threatens authority. You were born to be a revolutionary. You can't stand rules because in your heart you know there's a better way. You have strengths dangerous to the establishment, and it wants them eliminated. So your whole life you've been told your strengths were weaknesses. Now I'm telling you otherwise. Your impulsivity is a gift. Impulses are your key to the miraculous. Your distractibility is an artifact of your inspired creativity. Your mood swings reflect the natural pulse of life. They give you
energy when you're high, and deep soulful insight when you're low. Been diagnosed with a disorder, that's society's latest way to deny its own illness by pointing the finger at you. Your addictive personality is just a symptom of your vast, underused capacity for heroic creative expression and spiritual connection. Your utter lack of repression, your wide-eyed idealism, your unmitigated open mind. Didn't anyone ever tell you? These are the traits shared by the greatest pioneers and visionaries, innovators, revolutionaries, procrastinators, and drama queens, activists on the social scene, space cadets and mavericks, philosophers and derelicts, business suits flying fighter jets, football stars and sex addicts, celebrities with ADD, alcoholics who seek novelty, first responders, prophets and saints, mystics and JJJs. We are the same, you know, cause we're all affected by the way. We are the same, you know, cause we're all attracted to the flame. Eternal substrate of the cosmos. It guides the very current of time and space. The way is known by some as the will of God, divine providence, the Holy Spirit, the implicate order, the Tao, reverse entropy, life force. But for now, we'll simply call it the way. The way is reflected in you as the source of your inspiration, the source of your passions, your wisdom, your enthusiasm, your intuition, your spiritual fire, love. The way takes the chaos out of the universe and breathes life into it, giving it divine order. The way, when expressed by the mind, is genius. When perceived through the eyes, is beauty. When felt through the senses, is grace. When allowed into the heart, is love. Sense the way directly, but then there are the wayseers, the keepers of the flame. Wayseers have an unexplainable knack for just knowing the way. They sense it in their very being. They can't tell you why or how they arrived at the right answer. They just know it in their core. They can't show their work, so don't ask. Their minds simply resonate with the way. When the way is present, so are they. While others are blind to it, and society begs you to ignore it, the way stirs you inside. Neurological repression blocks most people's awareness of the way. Censoring all thoughts and impulses from the unconscious is their prefrontal cortex, the Gestapo of the brain. Nothing which violates its socialized programming even gets through. But your mind is different. Your mind has been cracked wide open to the way by some miraculous genetic trait, some psychotropic chemical, or maybe even by the will of your own soul. Your brain's reward pathways have been hijacked, dopamine employed to overthrow the fascist dictatorship of your prefrontal cortex. Now your brain is free of repression, your mind free of censorship, your awareness exposed to the turbulent seas of the unconscious. Through this open doorway, divine light shines into your consciousness, showing you the way. This is what makes you a wayseer. 90% of human civilization is populated with those whose brains are blocked to the way. Their brains are hardwired to enforce the social programming indoctrinated since birth. Unlike you, they cannot break out of this programming because they have not yet experienced the necessary revolution of mind.
These program people take social institutions and rules very seriously. Society is full of games programmed to keep people's minds occupied so they will not revolt. These games often cause sick fixations on peculiar protocols, power structures, taboos, and domination. All subtle forms of human bondage. This distinct form of madness is not only tolerated by the masses, but insisted upon. The program ones believe in rules so forcefully, they become willing to destroy anyone who violates them. Wayseers are the ones who call their bluff. Since Wayseer minds are free to reject social programming, Wayseers readily see these social institutions for what they are: imaginary games. Wayseers comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. Helping those who are lost in these games and refuse to help themselves is the calling of many Wayseers. Since Wayseers are the ones who keep contact with the original source of reality, they are able to disrupt societal conventions and even governments to realign humanity with the way. The Wayseers are an ancient lineage, a kind of priesthood, carriers of the flame, ones in the know. There must always be Wayseers to reform the dizzying, psychotic, spinning wheels of society. Giant, mindless hamster wheels obscuring the pure blue sky, keeping humanity shackled in a darkened cage. So Wayseers are called to shed light on the madness of society, to continually resurrect the timeless, transcendent spirit of truth. Wayseers reveal this divine truth by devoting themselves to the birth of some creative or disruptive act, expressed through art or philosophy, innovations in shake of industry, revolutions for democracy, coups and total hypocrisy, movements of solidarity, changes that leave a legacy, rebellions against policy, spirit-infused technology, moments of clarity, things that challenge barbarity, watersheds of sincerity, momentous drives for charity. We are all the same, you know, 'cause we're all affected by the way. We are all the same, you know, 'cause we're all attracted to the flame. This is your calling, Wayseer. You found your tribe. Welcome home. We'll be right back.